Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Sometimes the impression is given that once you reach age 60, it's downhill from there, meaning it's just a fight to stay alive, a fight to maintain any degree of happiness and satisfaction. Well, our guest says that is nonsense. As a matter of fact, our guest today is going to disclose to you over the next 1 hour the secrets to happiness after age 60. You may wonder, is there a formula by which you can have a satisfied, fulfilled life after age 60? Well, our guest assures you that there is, and she is here to tell us about it.
We have on today's show, we have Judy Squirr. She is a retired professional manager, author, humorist, and motivational speaker. Judy has been a guest on programs such as Focus on the Family, and she is a featured speaker at the Time Out for Women's National Conference. Judy and her husband, Jerry, are co-authors of the book Creative Grandparenting and When Prince Charming Falls Off His Horse. We are going to talk today about smiling after 60. Welcome, Judy.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Judy, it's great you could join us today, and I can tell you that we're all on the edge of our seats. We want to know, what is the secret to taking the last third or so of our lives and making it the very best part of our lives? In other words, the idea that everything could be leading up to this last third rather than the last third being the conclusion, the concluding period. Instead, it's the peak, it's the climax of our lives in many ways. And you believe that, don't you?
I do. And not only that, when I talk about these principles to different groups, I always say, you can say smiling after 60, but the principles are good if you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100. The principles are the same. How do we celebrate life and smile after 60?
But why is it then after age 60, though, that somehow these principles, these ways in which we might have been satisfied in our youth and maybe our mid-lives or mid-careers, why is it that sometimes people lose grasp on these basic practices or principles?
Well, I think one of the things that happens when you get older, first of all, you realize you're on the bottom half of the hill. You've gone to the top, and some people even say, I didn't even know I was at the top. But we start having losses in our life. We say goodbye oftentimes to friends, to families, to those we love. And then we also have issues that happen physically. And so sometimes if we focus on the negatives and not what we really have, you can get into a downward spiral.
And that makes complete sense. There are some things in the real world. This is not simply our imagination that life is coming to a conclusion sooner than later, at least sooner than it was in our 20s, we could assume or we could believe. But you point out that there are some real things happening outside us that impact that. I mean, we are losing friends, and we are having some physical problems, and maybe our job opportunities or earning opportunities were not what they once were. So what is your response then? How do we react to these circumstances?
Well, there's the new term. I happen to be married to a therapist, which always is quite interesting. When I started having my own issues,
he's giving you a little unsolicited advice sometimes, huh?
Exactly. But one of the things is we really do have to be intentional. And we need to stop. And I always say to people, how do you have a good day? And I think the first thing is when you wake up, and I do this every day. Every day when I wake up, I usually quote the verse, "This is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it." And I'm going to make choices. Now, sometimes I might feel like, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. Then I would rephrase that and say, this is the day the Lord has made, and I'm just going to be miserable in it. And then I'll even add, and I can make everyone else miserable too.
Yeah,
you
get the sense that some people you run across during the day have made that commitment first thing in the morning.
Well, I always say to these negative people, their favorite song is Cry Me a River. You know, their favorite book is called Why Me? And then the favorite phrase is, if only, you know, if only this would happen, if only my kids would come, if only my husband would, if only my wife wouldn't. You know, we could spend all our life if only. And then, of course, we belong to the woulda, coulda, shoulda club.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're this way, you're not going to celebrate and enjoy the day you're in.
Yeah, so I like the fact that in the title of your book about smiling after age 60, that you do focus on some of those unique challenges after age 60. Because while it's true, as you said earlier, that a lot of these principles really should be applied throughout your life, somehow it seems to require being a little more intentional, a little more deliberate and determined in the face of some of the challenges we've mentioned, among others, that wait you after age 60.
Well, and again, by the way, I really don't have a book on this yet. I just do a lot of speaking on it. The book that we have written is, of course, Creative Grandparenting, and then Prince Charming Falls Off His Horse. But, again, these principles apply to all of our life. And I think the first thing we need to do when I talk about being intentional, and that is we need to look at the positive. And we need to say what's good. Now, I often tell the story. I worked for 20 years in long-term care for an organization here in the Grand Rapids area. And one of the things, for a while I was running an assisted living facility, and I had a lady that came into my facility. She was like 98 or 99 years old when she came in. And I said to her, "Why are you coming into the Holland home?" And she said, "I don't know, I just keep living." She said, she says, "I'm going to be 100 and my kids are getting sick." And so I always tell people, you know, for those of us, you know, when I'm 100, how old will my oldest child be? Or, you know, well, mine's going to be 82. So lesson number one, be nice to the grandchildren.
Yeah.
Because you need to have them stop by you first, especially now that many people are surviving longer. But anyway, so this lady, and I would like to say to my residents, instead of, you know, how are you? Because most people in assisted living, there's a reason they're there. But there's still so many things that are good. And so oftentimes I would say, you know, what feels good? So one day I'm going down the hall, and my little lady is coming down the hall. She's got her walker. She's got hearing aid in both ears. And she's going down the hallway, and I looked at her, and I said, "What feels good today?" She looks at me, and she goes, "What?" I said, "What feels good?" She goes, "What feels good?" I said, "Yes." And this is literally what she did. She put her hands on her cheeks, her face, and then she put her hand on her rear, and she says, "My cheeks, both sets." That's what feels good. And I'll never forget that, because everybody has stuff that feels good. And we have to look at the positive in ourselves. So I may not be totally perfect, but as Ashley Brilliant says, you know, I may not be totally perfect, but parts of me are excellent. So let's look at what we have, not at what we don't have.
And you know, you point out a setting where some would believe it's especially hard, you know, to maintain a positive attitude, which is in, pardon the phrase, in an institutional environment, meaning in assisted living or in skilled care facilities. But you point out that's a stereotype that perhaps is undeserved, that in fact you can be as happy there as any other place. Is that right?
Oh, yes, because, again, when I would share this with seniors groups, first of all, when you're in a facility like that, a lot of the hard work is taken away from you. When I used to give tours in my facility, oftentimes, you know, most people don't wake up and say, "Oh, I feel miserable today. I think I'm going to go in, you know, into long-term care." Most people don't want to do that.
Right.
However, when I would give tours, sometimes I would say to the client coming in, I'd say, "Well, you know, does the Queen of England have someone help her dress?" And the answer is yes. "Does the Queen of England have someone help her cook and prepare her meals?" Sure. "How about cleaning the palace?" Sure. "How about helping her with her calendar and activities?" Sure. And then I would say, "Well, welcome to the Holland home. We're going to treat you like the Queen of England."
So a lot of it really is, it's, we've heard it before, we're not minimizing that there are challenges, but it's what you do with those challenges and how you view them as to, can you be happy after 60?
Right.
Well,
let me ask you, before you, I know that you have
so much information you can convey today, and so we're going to try to stay on track. There are a couple of things I definitely want to cover. But I have to take an exit here and get your insight and recommendation to our listeners regarding, you know, having been someone who had responsibility for caring for an assisted living facility and doubtlessly a lot of familiarity with skilled care facilities, often called nursing homes, can you give just a quick one, two, or three items on a checklist that somebody might use if they're walking through to evaluate a prospective place to live, whether it's assisted living or some other facility? I mean, are there some certain things that you as an insider know that would be very telling and informative about the facility at large? Can you give our listeners a very short checklist?
Well, since my retirement, I've had several people ask me that. In fact, I've even toured facilities with friends or family members as we were looking, for someplace. And I think the first thing I would do is talk to your friends and families who already have people in the facility, because recommendations are, would be very good at this point. You need to know, if I go into the facility, I want to know what their licensure is. I think that's very important. I want to know if they do have state inspections. If they do, I would like to see some of them. Nowadays, you can look this all up online, and so you can find that out. I also look at how the people interact, how the staff interacts with the resident. You want to know, of course, the staffing, what the ratio is, which is very important, to the resident, to the to the staff number. But also, I think one of the key things is you need to say to people, what will you do for my mother, for this, our father, for this much? Because if they have a rate, okay, then what are the extra charges if they're going to have those? Because I've had a lot of people say, what's going to happen? The other thing is, if they outlive their income and they outlive their finances, can they still stay with government programs, or do they have to move out?
In other words, are they Medicaid certified, you mean?
Well, either Medicaid or Social Security or SSI, government, whatever government programs that you're having in your state. And okay, some of these, of course, will be federal. But and then, of course, you do have the insurances and so forth today. But you need to know those things, because it can look really nice. But then as soon as mother or father has an incident or an event, what is that going to do? The other thing is, if they have dementia, I really strongly recommend that you look at their programming. And a locked door is not just dementia care. You need to know the programming that they have. What do you do, especially for them? The organization I was with even have a church service that will bring you to tears. It was so meaningful. They would sing the first verse of a song, no hymn books, because it would be too confusing. But see, they all would know, like, what a friend we have in Jesus. They all know the first verse. And so they would sing it. They had a very short little object lesson message, but it was their opportunity to worship and sing the songs that they remember from years ago. And then maybe half an hour later, they won't remember that they went to the service, but you brought them joy at that time. So find out what the programming is that the organization has and what they do, again, for them. It's more than just a locked door. Right. The other thing is the continuum of care. If things do, if a parent does deteriorate, is there another level that they can move into? And, if it's a couple, can they still communicate with each other? There's just a lot of, things to look at.
Boy, what a good list. For our listeners, so what the suggestions we got just now included talk to referrals. I can see how referrals are huge, people investigate the licensure of the facility, and you can see copies of state inspections and other inspections. You can follow those and obtain those. Watch the people and staff interact. And I guess that'd be especially helpful if you're there on not an official visit, when you'll see a more candid situation probably. And ratio of resident to staff. I can see how that would be huge. Find out what are the extra charges, what's included in the base amount, and are there extra charges for extra services, and find out what exactly those are. And then also find out if the facility is Medicaid or SSI qualified, or whatever other state or federal program that you might need to rely on in the event that your loved one or you run out of money. Regarding dementia, You say that well. You don't need simply a locked door.
Right.
In other words, you want wonderful programming. And the example of the worship service designed for people with dementia just sounds like a wonderful part of a program for long-term care. And then a continuum of care. That's a great phrase, and it just refers to the fact that as you degenerate, if you degenerate, that would there'd be places there as part of that larger community of service that you could, graduate to. And then if you're a couple, you'd also want to know to what extent you can stay together as a couple. That's a great list, and you did that entirely without my warning you. I was going to throw that at you, Judy. All right.
I have a whole bunch of notes in front of me. That one wasn't in it.
Well, very helpful. Go ahead.
Can I recommend a book that, and again, and it's actually was written quite a few years ago already. It's called Loving Your Parents When They Can No Longer Love You.
And what a great
title. Dr. Terry Hargrave. And Terry Hargrave is, I sat under him several times in several workshops. And it's just a great book as you deal with aging parents. And he is a therapist, but it's his own life journey. But he also has checklists in there for the caregivers. One of the key things here is for family members, to look at, okay, mom, we have to have the family meeting. How do you do this? What are we going to say? He has a whole thing in here just on caregiving. For the family members, before they would go into a facility or whatever, like you usually have one person that's a chief caregiver. Oftentimes, the daughter will take care of mother, type of thing. And then sometimes the son is the one that does the finance, but they even have to connect. And sometimes the son will say, well, I don't know if I want mom to spend this much money. She's going to run out of money. And so those are issues that families have to take care of.
Hmm.
And I often would say to seniors groups, when I speak in church groups and so forth, we spend our whole life, now think of this, wanting our kids' marriages to go well, wanting the family to go well. And the best thing we can do as we get older and as we age, is we will show our loved ones how to age and how we're going to die.
Mm-hmm. That is great.
And how are we going to live this? So make it easier for them. Set up a plan. Let them know. Let them know where things are. Sit down as a family with them while you still are mentally competent and get these things down. Make it easy for your kids.
What a wonderful purpose.
When they take over.
I mean, what a great purpose, among others, for your living in that last phase is to continue adding value to your loved ones. We're going to take a break now. Back in just a moment with Judy Squire.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors, and now attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Welcome back. We are talking today with Judy Squire about the subject of smiling after 60. A lot of times we spend lots of time on this program talking about health and wellness. We're not talking all about your health, but about your mental health today and how you can have a better life and smile after 60.
And the advice you have, Judy, is so rich with wisdom in addition to sheer practicality. And before we went into the break, you were making what I think is just a tremendous suggestion in terms of how people view their aging and their purpose, perhaps. Sometimes we can feel that in that last third of our lives that there is not much purpose and, that we're simply existing. And sometimes our culture seems to tell us that, at least this very young-oriented, youth-oriented culture that we're in today, especially in America. But you pointed out that, no, that duty that we felt to our loved ones, to our children and then our grandchildren, that duty continues to exist, but in a very special and different way during the last third of our lives.
I think that is so true. And when in our book, Creative Grandparents, we even talk about the roles of grandparents. And one of the things is we are the historians of the family. We can tell the story of, like I tell the story of my mother and my grandparents. And those, because after two generations, you don't know them anymore. So we're the family historians. We can tell things that happened in the past. We can also tell the present, and even where we are, you know, spiritually, or what we have learned in our life. We can share that, you know, from the time our grandchildren are little, you know, until adulthood. I'm now a great grandmother, so I'm working on that part. And but it's important for us to be the family historian. We also are the cheerleader of the grandchildren, of our even of our own children. Help them out as much as we can in their life yet to help make it easier for them. And what we had talked about before the break was one of the things you can do is plan for your future. Have, you know, have them know what your advance directives are. Let them know where the finances are, where they can get the information, including, by the way, the passwords.
Hmm.
Yeah, don't forget those passwords.
My mother forgets her password already. So
I forget mine too. That's why they're...
Well, I do too, come to think of it. So, but let me have you pause there for a second.
Okay.
And you made a couple of wonderful points there quickly, and I want to be sure that people heard that. And one in particular is the role of the historian. You know, we tend to hear that primitive cultures or earlier cultures relied on an oral tradition by which they transmitted lessons and teachings and history, etc. But, you know, in a real way, unless you're a president or unless you're a prominent figure where perhaps there is an adequate documentation of your life, but for the average person, for my grandfather, for your grandfather, for our parents, you know, all that information, our great-great-grandparents, I mean, there may be very skeletal information through genealogical studies, but it is skeletal. I mean, the only way that the flesh can be placed, so to speak, on our ancestors is by this word of mouth. And it's very easy with families spreading out across the continent for a grandchild to know nothing about a great-grandfather, for example, certainly not a great-great-grandfather. And unless there's somebody who deliberately transmits that information, it's lost forever.
Because the kids aren't going to ask.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, especially the younger kids, they're not going to think to ask. And yet they may want to know, what toys did you play with, Grandma? What types of things did you do when you were my age? Those types of things are wonderful to build into their lives.
And you can do this by being a storyteller. You know, tell them stories of things in your past. I told my grandchildren the stories that my grandpa told me when he was on the farm. And my mother was on a runaway buckboard once. And so I would tell that story so they would get a little bit of the picture. The other thing you can do, and again, in the Old Testament, remember when Joshua crossed over into the Promised Land, they put the stones up, and they said, you know, now when they ask where those stones are, you tell the story of how God brought you here. Mm-hmm. You have special mementos in your house the same way,
Where
you can bring out, you know, ours is our living room furniture. Our couch was actually given to us by the family that led my husband to Christ, and we're in ministry because of this couple. And so I tell the story of this couch, and so they still get the story, and now my grandchild and my great-grandchildren know the story of the living room outfit that we have and how God had used this in these people in our lives, and we all have that. Let me tell you another story, when I was in one of my facilities in here at Grand Rapids in the Holland home, I had a lady who was one of the neatest ladies, and she knew she was getting more frail. She was in independent living and in an apartment, and she called all the daughters and daughter-in-laws in for a weekend. And she says, I'm going to be going to assisted living. It's time for me to go. I don't want to be a burden to you kids. And in the Holland home, we have a continuum of care. So she was basically going to go down the hall into a different section. But she said, I want you to spend the weekend with me, and I'm going to show you some of these beautiful mementos that I have, and I'm going to tell you the story, and then I'm going to give you each one.
Hmm.
So she told the story of the special mementos. I had another lady who, when they ran out of money, and she said, I wanted to get gifts. And so she said, one Christmas, I took some of the special things from our life, and I wrapped them up, and I told the story, and each child and grandchild got a gift from Grandma with the story. And those kids said it was the best Christmas they ever had.
And you know, there are, along those lines, the additional practical ways to create this record that can survive generations. And I think that it's helpful now that we do have technology and we can use it. And it's easy now to record, to do voice recordings. Mm-hmm. And those who aren't inclined to write, I'll say that my mother loves to write. And she wrote this little booklet, and it's probably single-typed. It's probably no more than 20, 25 pages, maybe a little more. But it's wonderful. I mean, it's filled with what she remembers about her father, her grandfather, mm-hmm. and her great-grandfather. And she talked about growing up, and she just really created a document that will be of value to our family and will endure. But I know others might rely on simply creating an audio recording where they sit and talk. But, boy, once those records are gone, once that experience about prior generations is gone, I think something valuable is lost in a family.
A few years ago, my husband was performing a wedding, and the videographer was there, and he said that he did a lot of stories. He would do videos and make CDs for families to give to their children that the parents, you know, would tell their story. So my husband
That's
said,
great.
Well, do you have a few? Could we do it? So I had like 2 hours to put together a whole bunch of stuff, and he taped us.
Huh.
And then I walked through the house. I looked at my grandkids. We talked about each of our grandkids, what they meant to us, how special they were. And it cost us a few $100s. And then
That's
we
reasonable.
Gave it to the kids mm-hmm. for Christmas.
Huh.
And the grandkids.
What a great gift.
And
yeah.
What a memento for your grandchildren as well, who, you know, who are going to maybe go back and re-listen to those. My grandma loved me. My grandma believed in me. And then show it to their kids. This is what my grandma said about me when I was your age.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And what's most important to do it is that, as you said a while ago, Susan, you can't count on your grandchildren when they're young to pull on your sleeves and say, tell me about so-and-so. It's probably they're going to have that most yearning interest maybe in their 20s, mm-hmm. 30s, 40s, maybe even 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And when they really start thinking about aging and think, boy, I wish I knew those things.
Well, and I think sometimes when your grandparent or your parent is there, you don't even think about asking the questions because
yeah.
they're there.
Exactly.
And now that they're not there, you miss it.
Exactly.
And you wonder, well, I thought I was paying attention. I know my grandma grew up on a farm in Arkansas, but what was that like? I don't know.
I wish I'd asked those questions.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, and you mentioned other things that we can do, practical things to make our aging easier. I guess this is under banner of, you know, making our aging an example for our children and also making it easy for them. And you mentioned some practical items, such as going ahead and disclosing passwords and where documents are and having things signed and executed that will, you know, facilitate your care when needed. And of course, your funeral services, I'm sure, when you're gone. What else can we do to age in a way that is a great model and is of value to our family?
Again, I think when we interact with our family members, when they come to visit us, first of all, we need to remember that they are busy. And so when they do come, you know, let's be positive. Let's be grateful. Let's look at what's good. I always say to people, before you get out of bed, name 5 things for which you're grateful for that day. Before you even get out of bed, put yourself in that frame of mind. Oftentimes what will happen as we get older, we start looking at the negatives because we don't feel good, you know, or you know, we feel lonely because the kids are so busy. Celebrate the fact that they can go out and be busy and do those things. And so reframe that into a positive way. One time I had a resident who had a tendency to be very negative. In fact, the kids came to me one time, and they said, 2 sisters, and they said, you know, every time we visit Mother, she's always so negative, and she tells us everything we're doing wrong. And then what she did is actually, I'll just give you 2 names, and they're not the real names. So So it was Mary and Martha, we'll say. So when Mary would come, Mother would say everything that Martha was doing so much better. When Martha would come, she would tell what Mary was doing so much better. So I said to the daughters, when they came to my office, they said, we just don't know what to do because Mama's so negative. And I said, well, first of all, call each other after you visit so you know what you've done right. But I said, secondly, the sad part is oftentimes when people are negative, they don't realize how they sound.
No, they
and
don't.
It wasn't long after that. I was actually teaching a Bible class, and this little lady was in the class. And she was complaining about, you know, yeah, my kid's never coming, yada, yada, yada. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, sometimes people want to, our whole life is we want to avoid pain and gain pleasure. I mean, whether it's advertisements, whatever it is, you want to avoid pain and gain pleasure. So I said, how do you treat your family when they come? And I said this to the whole room of ladies that were sitting there. I said, how are you? I said, do you celebrate life? Are you grateful when they come? Are you giving them positive input, or are you being negative? Because most people, when they get up in the morning, they're not going to say, oh, how am I going to be miserable today? I know, I'll go see Mother. You know, let's be the positive influence. And my mother-in-law taught me this. And she was bedridden for the last, like, 9 months of her life. But whenever we went to see her, she always had positive things. She was always grateful. She would say, oh, the food isn't like eye makeup, but you know, it's good. And did you see the bird out my window? And everybody commented on how positive she was. So you didn't hate going to see her because she wasn't going to drag you down.
And it does produce this sort of vicious cycle in a way where, you know, perhaps there's some delay, and so the kids don't go and visit Mom as often as they could or should. And as you point out, they're busy, and Mom may lose a little bit of sight of that. Maybe the kids lose sight of Mom. Mm-hmm. But in any case, they finally come, and of course, Mom or Dad may have a tendency, as we all would, to say, you know, you really don't come see me very often, and to be a little grumbling perhaps because of that.
Which makes the kids have a bad experience
in the visit. So when they leave, then they're less likely to come back soon.
I'm not doing that again.
And I think that those are such words of wisdom, and we would all be well served to remember that, because many of us, if we think about it, we had a similar experience when we visited older loved ones, where perhaps they weren't feeling well, and it was hard to be in a good mood. And in fairness to them, as you concede, Judy, it is a challenge to be positive when you have physical pain or physical discomfort. And if you don't do it, as you say, very intentionally, if you don't have a determination, you know, to experience some joy, then it may not just come maybe the way it did when you were 20 or you were 25.
And the other thing is, I can't make anybody do anything. I can only be responsible for my own reactions and how I live. I cannot make my kids do anything differently. I can only be responsible for me and my attitude.
That's wisdom, yeah. So we can always, whatever our circumstances, we have control of that one thing.
Right.
And that's the way we respond.
Right, how you choose. Again, this is a day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it.
And that takes prayer, doesn't it?
It takes prayer, it takes fortitude, and sometimes, even in the hard times, because we all go through hard times, we all go through loss, we all have body parts that hurt as we get older, but again, what is good, and focusing on what is good, not at what is not good. And I do think here again, the comfort of the scriptures, the beauty of nature, little things like that can keep us focused on what is good instead of always looking at what is not good.
And it makes
what I can't control.
And doesn't it make you wonder how those who lack spiritual faith, who do not see a purpose in this life and something beyond this life, who face old age, I guess for them it is especially challenging to have an uplifting spirit when they believe there's nothing in that exists except atoms, molecules floating mm-hmm. around. But I think that many of our listeners are are believers and they do see a great purpose and they do know that, that, you know, our life is intended to serve others and that there is a grand plan and there's someone in control. And as you point out, remembering that in that last third of our lives, especially in all phases of our life, but in our last third of our life, to be conscious of that when we may otherwise get out of bed in the morning and feel a lot of discomfort and we tell ourselves to smile. And without, I think, that spiritual dimension, that would be a very tall order, maybe an impossible thing.
It would be. Again, your final lesson that we will teach our children, our nieces, our nephews, our neighbors, is how we age and how to die.
Wonderful.
We can do this with God's grace.
Back in just a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors, and now attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Judy Squirr has such rich wisdom for aging and having a fulfilling life, a meaningful life, a very purposeful life in that last third of your time here on earth. So, Judy, we've talked about several things. And I know that that there are simple strategies, things that, that do not require much more than our making a determination to do those things, and then our attitude follows. And I've always wondered, is it true that we can do physical things, and as a result, you know, whether it's our demeanor or our appearance or whatever it might be, that that can affect our attitude? Is that possible?
Oh, yes. In fact, again, when we were talking in our earlier segments, we talked about looking at the positive in yourself, in others, and in your circumstances. I want to give you a quote, and then I'm going to move over a little bit further to talk about looking for the humor, because not only do we need to look at the positive, but when we look at the positive in our circumstances, I love Tim Hansel's quote in his book, You Gotta Keep Dancing. He said, I'm still convinced that if you have to move even 10 inches from where you are now in order to be happy, you never will be. Because we need to choose joy where we are. And this is so important for us to do, again, you know, Philippians 3. But we need to do this. So we're going to look at the positive, but we also need to look for the humor. There are so many things out there that you're either going to laugh or cry. And somebody one time said, you know, laugh and the world laughs with you. Cry and you simply get wet. But Proverbs says, you know, a happy heart makes the face cheerful. Proverbs 15:15, the cheerful heart has a continual feast. And I love Proverbs 15:30. A cheerful, and this is in King James Version, a cheerful look brings joy to the heart, and good news gives health to the bones.
And there's science to support this, right?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, in Proverbs 17, it says, a cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries the bones. Now they have research out there that actually backs up what Solomon said, duh. And, you know, oh, really? But anyway, they do have the research now that actually shows and is out there that they can test the benefits of smiling, the benefits of laughing. There was a French proverb that says, you know, the most completely lost of all days is the one in which we have not laughed. And it really is a momentary holiday. It's like a tranquilizer with no side effects. So the benefits of humor and laughter and just the act of smiling. Studies now show even if you don't feel like smiling, if you get up and you smile, it changes your body chemistry for the better. And so it's going to get these endorphins going. Not only will it change yours, but when I smile at you or I smile at my spouse or the people walking into my room, I change theirs because looking at smiling will also change your body chemistry.
And if it's a genuine smile, it's like we sense when somebody has a rich, you know, warm smile on their face. You know, you just...
Well, yeah, first of all...
Go ahead.
Yeah, it brings you together. It brings you together. It also makes you look 5 years younger, by the way. because, you know, you never look at yourself in the mirror mad. You always smile when you look at yourself in the mirror because you look better that way, duh. But I think with the physical, the benefits of of, again, smiling and laughing. There's physical benefits, there's psychological benefits, and there's the social benefits. And Viktor Frankl talked about that, that if he could not laugh, you know, they had to use humor to survive Auschwitz and Dachau. He says, if we did not use humor, we couldn't have survived.
Mm-hmm. What about that? I didn't know that.
And then there's a story with him when he was actually helping a gentleman getting back from the fields where they were working. And this gentleman, Victor was dragging him to try to get him back into the barracks before he would be killed. And the gentleman stopped and he said, Victor, stop, look. He said, look, that is the most beautiful sunset we have seen since we have been in this concentration camp. And that man could still look and see the sunset. So Viktor Frankl tells these stories, but really the psychological benefits, the physical benefits, I love what Red Skelton said. He said, no matter what your heartache may be, laughing will help you to forget it, if only for a few seconds. You know, Ecclesiastes talks about that, you know, time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. And oftentimes, even when you're at a funeral, how many times do you weep and laugh at the same funeral? Mm-hmm. You do,
you're right.
This is the balance. This is the balance that you have. So, but we need to, first of all, learn to laugh at ourselves. H.G. Wells says the crisis of today is the joke of tomorrow. And if it's not going to be the joke, it's going to be the story of survival. Mm-hmm. And again, you can tell those stories. The story that I have made thousands of dollars on is the time I was caught nude by the paper boy. Now, that was a terrible day in my life, but now it's so funny. And I think what happens, we have to look at some of these things, because you're either going to laugh or you say, oh, I would just die if. And I say to people, no, you don't die if you're caught nude. I know, because I was and I didn't die. But now, 5 years later, it's a great story.
Yeah.
And so you have the humorous things. Somebody else said one time, I think it was Henry Ward Beecher, if I recall, that a person without a sense of humor is like a wagon without springs, jolted by every pebble in a road. And I often say to people, we not only have pebbles, we've got potholes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So it's the value of humor. But we can make every day a fun day, even if we're flat on our back. There's humorous things to watch. There's songs we can sing. There's funny personal stories. I actually, one time when I was in my assisted living, I bought these little wind-up mice. We happened to have a mouse that was in the facility. And so the residents, oh, I saw a mouse. So I bought wind-up mice, and we put it on the table, and we watched these wind-up mice go, and they all forgot about the fact that, the exterminator came to get our mice. They had one on the table, and they were all laughing. So now I took a negative, and we made a joke out of it. It's important to keep playing. You know, you never are too old to stop playing. Blow bubbles. A lot of ways we can play.
Yeah, and that's one thing that's important. It's hard or at least it's easier to pursue those light moments, those happy moments, in the presence of others. And I guess there's a tendency, is there not, as you age, for some people to become more isolated. And I don't think we're intended to live that way.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Well, and again, you know what gives you joy. And if it's going to be humor, if it's going to be, you know, memories, the pictures from your past. It was interesting when people move from their homes into another facility, into a smaller facility. It's interesting what they take. They cannot take the designer couch anymore or the big hutch. But they always take the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah.
And they always take a few mementos because that's what's important to them. So it's still the people. But even if you're home and you're alone, again, you know, maybe, and today again with our society, the way we have, you know, pick out the television shows that you like. In fact, sometimes people say, I don't know what to get mom or dad for Christmas. You know, give them a subscription to cable TV so they can pick the shows they like, because nowadays they've got all these old shows from our youth.
and
they will laugh at those. They're not going to laugh at the new stuff, but they're still going to laugh at Andy Griffith. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, those are the things that we can look at. There's a lot of things that we can do that still brings a smile to our face.
And it is important then to make a decision that as you age that you're going to view this as a wonderful time, perhaps the best time of your life?
Well, it's the most free you're ever going to be in some ways. You know, and a lot, and now at my age, I'm 71. My husband's 75. You know, I no longer care what, I don't have to wear nice shoes anymore. If I can wear my cloddy ones if they're comfortable, because I really don't care. And my skin is sagging, but that's okay because, you know, always, I don't have to try to impress anybody anymore. There's a lot of fun things that happen as you get older. My husband always, I used to say years ago, you know, what will people say or what will people think? And my husband would always say, so what do you care? Well, now that I'm older, I really don't care.
So anymore, how did you greet?
I'm on the end.
How did you greet, Judy? Just we're running out of time here, but I'm just curious. In the decision that as you passed age 65, that question many people struggle with, am I going to continue working? Am I going to work part time and take other time for recreation? Am I going to travel? Am I going to move to Florida and just play golf? I mean, what analysis did you go through as you thought about?
Again, I think each individual is going to be different. I had an uncle who worked until he was in his 80s, and because he just loved his business, he loved what he did, so he kept doing it. I retired when my husband retired. We're 4 years difference in age, and so when he retired, I retired with him so we could spend some us time, and we chose to. Well, we wrote a book. But we you know, because we wanted to travel and we wanted to look at these things, what we would like to still do in these last years of our life. Because even for us now, we're getting to the end of how much we're no longer going to do overseas travel. We went last year, our son paid for us to go with him to Italy. And we had a wonderful time, but we realized coming back, that long flight, my husband's 75, he had circulation issues, we're done with that.
It's a long flight.
We enjoyed it, yeah. But now, so now we do something else that will be different. The other thing is there's still a lot of things people can do. I just went to Washington, D.C. I had a granddaughter that moved to Washington, D.C. She's very busy, has a really long work week. So I went over there to help her unpack. Now, I told her, I said, Grandma will come. And she has a house with lots of stairs. I said, I have to go slow. I'm not like I used to be, but I'll putz away and work on this. And she was so grateful. So there's little things that we can still do for other people, even if it's just baking something for someone. But look at what you can still do for other people. And do not, and I repeat, do not minimize the times that you have when you wake up during the night. This is another thing that happens when we get old. You know, 3:30, we're awake, right? But use this time like David did. This is the time to meditate and you're in your bed. But also, this is the time that you can take and you can pray for circumstances, for the children in your life, for the adults in your life, and you can focus on them and bring them up to the Lord when other people can't. If you're still alive, God has a purpose.
And so what is your advice to those who may be looking at retirement, maybe they're in retirement, and they're wondering to what extent they should commit to activities or programs or charitable events or their church? How important do you think are those commitments to happiness?
I think making a difference in someone's life is very important. Don't be selfish. Be selfless. So, and I think you need to... first of all, we need to count our own blessings, live a life of gratitude. We need to celebrate what we have. We need to choose joy. Yes, we need to smile. But then I always say, ask yourself these three questions. What am I grateful for today? How can I enjoy today? And who can I appreciate or love or help today? And every day, make a difference.
And that might include any sort of volunteer work. There are so many ways in which you can make a difference in somebody's life. Boy, this has been wonderful. Yes, wonderful time we've spent together here, Judy. And you have so much wisdom for the aging process and being fulfilled and happy. We would recommend, you have a website, is that correct?
No, I don't anymore. Our books are through the Creative Grandparenting book is through Our Daily Bread Ministries, Discovery House. The Prince Charming is out of print, but you can get it really inexpensively on Amazon for a dollar.
Okay.
I always tell people. I think you are going to put on your site, if I recall, the little ditty I put together, 25 Ways to Have a Great Day. So that would be the best place to look it up.
We do have 25 Ways to Have a Great Day, and we will post that on our eldercarelaw.com website.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. And we look forward to your joining us again and telling us more about this process. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wonderful show, wonderful content. And remember, keep smiling. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.